You're listening to The Oddscast, the original UFC betting podcast that's straight to the point. Hosted by leading MMA oddsmaker Nick Kalikas and MMA journalist Brian Heminger, they provide you the absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting. MMAoddsbreaker.com. Don't place your wagers without us.
Welcome to the Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 241 event, which takes place in Anaheim, California. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley's free bet for UFC on ESPN Plus 14 won 1.25 units on Gilbert Burns, but he did lose 2.99 units on his premium bets after going 1-2 on his three plays. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC 241 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, ESPN, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a women's flyweight contest between Sabina Mazzo, who is 6-1, and Shayna Dobson, who is 3-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Couple quick shout-outs here before we get rolling. First, of course, betdsi.eu. Make sure you guys check out BetDSI. That's our official sponsored sportsbook for the Oddscast, and I'm going to be quoting the updated lines from BetDSI, so always make sure you guys give those guys some love. And also, our premium pick section at MMAoddsbreaker.com, Big Marley 3. Kyle Marley has been killing it. He's up over $26,000. That's over 260 units the last 15 months or so. The guy's on a roll. He has his play of the month available this weekend, so don't miss it. Click on the premium picks tab at MMAoddsbreaker.com and get Big Marley 3's plays. All right, getting right into the fight. Mazzo open minus 190, the comeback on Dobson at plus 150. And right now what we're seeing over at BetDSI is currently Mazzo minus 128, the comeback on Dobson at plus 107. So line margins have tightened up, more action coming in Dobson's way early on. In fact, she became a favorite. So this line flipped all the way where Dobson was favored at one point. Now, obviously, Mazzo getting some respect back and more action coming in her way as well. So there is two-way action at the sportsbooks right now, with the heavier action actually coming in on Mazzo. So despite the line moving as much as it did, I think a lot more places are going to need Dobson at this moment to come through than Mazzo, despite the movement, like I said. So this is an interesting fight because both these ladies like to stand and bang. Both of them are known for their striking skills, so it should be fun. I think more so than anything else right now, Mazzo came into the UFC with a lot of hype, and losing to Moroz, honestly, it was a letdown. So she underperformed. I think a lot of people kind of were scratching their heads by that performance. I think it was one of those things. If you watch that fight, even the commentator said that she had octagon jitters. She didn't perform her best. I know Mazzo was a lot better than what she showed in that fight for sure. But the truth is there was maybe a little bit too much hype coming into the UFC for Mazzo, because if you look at her striking skills, she has clean technique. Obviously, she trains at a good camp. She has a lot of decent experience against decent competition before she entered the UFC as well. And again, her striking technique, she has a couple highlight reel knockouts with her head kicks. And again, she's one of those type of fighters that gets a lot of respect due to her striking ability, and maybe a little bit too much because of those knockouts that she got early on in her career. But because if you're looking at her a little bit closer, she doesn't really have all that much knockout power. I think her leg kicks are where it's at, really, with her head kicks, and you know, the damages she could do with her kicking game is probably more so than her boxing. Her boxing's not bad. She utilizes that long reach that she does have over most of her opponents, and she can be effective sometimes with her hands as well, but more so it's her kicking game. Now, Dobson is almost the other way. She does have a kicking game. It's not bad. It's actually probably a little bit underrated, but most of her game is actually based on her boxing. I think she has good power in her hands. She has good speed. She's effective. She's accurate with her strikes as well. So I think it's her boxing versus Mazzo's kicking game that's going to come into play here. And if you look at Dobson, she has struggled in the past also, eating some kicks, taking some damage that way. So I think these ladies are going to be kind of picking each other off back and forth a little bit. And what it might come down to is actually the ground. It's kind of crazy to think that's the case, but I think if you see two strikers going at it, typically speaking, the person that has a slight edge maybe in another area as the ground could probably steal this fight. So if that's the case here, I think Mazo might have a slight edge. If it does hit the ground, I think she's underrated. We haven't seen a lot of her ground game because she hasn't had to use it that much, but she does have a bit of a ground game. And again, I think if anything, she has the edge over Dobson on the ground. So I think it'll be competitive on the feet. I think if it hits the ground, Mazo probably has the edge. So I've kind of been bouncing back and forth on this fight, and I'm going to probably side with Dobson right now. Why I'm saying that is because I think she will do a little bit more damage and she will mark Mazo up and she has a little bit more knockout power. So I think she'll be a little bit more effective. But again, to me, this is a pure toss up type of fight because both these ladies are flawed defensively and both of them like to stand and bang. So they should have what most people will think is fireworks going back and forth in this fight. So that said, slight lean towards Dobson, but not a confident pick. This fight realistically can go either way.
And yes, I agree that this fight could come down to the kicking game of Mazo versus Dobson's boxing, but you also have to look at overall, I would say, Mazo being the more technically sound striker. Yeah, she laid a bit of an egg in her UFC debut, but overall, I mean, she still has a superior defense compared to Dobson. She had much better striking accuracy compared to Dobson. So even though she did not perform to the best of her ability, she still is the more technically sound striker here. And unless Dobson can keep that constant pressure and stay in Mazo's face and not let her get comfortable enough to land strikes at distance with her kicking game, because Mazo does have some brutal kicks that can finish fights. If she's not able to get those off whatsoever, then Dobson should have a decent shot. But I just don't think Dobson can keep that kind of pressure going. Both fighters actually land at a similar rate in terms of pacing. So I think Mazo can keep up with Dobson if Dobson tries to turn up the heat. And yes, Dobson does have some more power in her hands than Mazo does, but she has a very similar reach. I don't think Dobson will be just connecting and not getting hit back. And I do think that Mazo is going to have those openings to land some kicks. And over the course of three rounds, I think those kicks can do some damage. She may not land a brutal head kick and knock Dobson out, but I think they'll land enough to the legs and body that could slow Dobson down over the course of three rounds. And I'm going to side with Mazo. I think that she bounces back after a not so great UFC debut, and I think she does get that first UFC win. So Mazo's going to be my pick. Now moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Kyung Ho Kang, who is 15-8 with one no contest, taking on Brandon Davis, who is 10-5. Now Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Kang open -185, the comeback on Davis +145. Looking over at BetDSI right now, we're seeing Kang -200, the comeback on Davis at +163. So line margins have tightened up. A little bit more action coming in Kang's way. But again, another spot where the books are going to get two-way action. That means Davis is getting some respect for sure. I mean, if you look at it, to me, this is a pretty clear fight. Both of them are very good, talented fighters, but Kang is more of the ground practitioner, more of the wrestling-based, grappling-based fighter. At least that's how he should be in this particular fight against Davis, and Davis should be the one that wants to keep this fight upright, sprawl, brawl, and try to be a little bit more effective and do damage on the feet, because that's where he's going to have the edge over Kang. So that's basically what it comes down to in this fight. Davis is a very well-rounded fighter. I think he's probably underrated even on the ground a bit, but that's where his difficulties come into play. When he gets beat, it's fighters that are able to take him down, control him on the ground, submit him on the ground, typically speaking as well. So that is the blueprint for Kang. I think Kang is pretty dominant in that fashion overall for the most part. He's a pretty solid fighter. Stand-up isn't bad, but again, I don't think he wants to get into an exchanging battle on the feet with Davis. I think that's probably a battle he'll end up losing on the scorecards if that happens. So that said, I think Kang's path of victory, again, is getting some takedowns, making this an ugly type of fight, maybe trying to utilize his submission ability on the ground and finishing Davis that way as well, or landing some ground and pound and just controlling the fight. So I'm going to lean with Kang because I think he's dominant enough to do that in this fight. But if he can't get rid of Davis early on in this fight, submit him on the ground, then it probably will be a grueling type of three rounds, close, competitive, But I still think Kang should get the nod regardless. Even if it's a 29-28 type of decision, I think the judges will see it for Kang if he has a scorecard. So my pick is Kang, and where the betting line is right now, minus 200 or so, kind of tricky because, again, if it's a scorecards with the state of MMA judging, I say it every podcast for a reason. If you guys are paying attention out there, you see how many horrific decisions we see on every UFC card. I mean, it never fails. So all decisions are kind of scary in my opinion, even if they're clear with these judges out there. So that said, it's kind of tough to lay much over 2-1 on Kang. Under 2-1, there might be a little bit of value on Kang. So the pick is Kang for me.
Yeah, and I like Kang here as well. Davis should definitely have the edge on the feet. He pushes a really high pace. He's kind of awkward and long and can mix things up well. And Kang does kind of have a tendency to get suckered into brawls at times. So if this stays standing, I would definitely favor Davis. But Kang's biggest strength absolutely is the ground. I mean, this guy is big. He's strong. He's powerful in terms of getting fights to the floor. And then when fights are on the ground, he's very dangerous. And Davis definitely does not have very good takedown defense. I think he got taken down about double-digit times by Enrique Barzola. So if Barzola could do it at 145, even though Davis has dropped down to 135, Kang is strong enough to drag Davis to the canvas as well. And that really should be the difference here, because on the feet, Davis will have an edge. I think Kang gets this fight to the floor at least two rounds and secures top position. And I wouldn't be surprised if Kang actually finishes this with a submission. This is a guy with just tremendous grappling ability, very strong top control, and he can go for the kill if he spots an opening. And I don't really feel like Davis's defensive grappling is going to be strong enough to stop him. So I'm going to pick Kyung Ho Kang. I think that he wins by first or second round submission. Now, dropping down to the strawweight division, we have Hannah Cyphers, who is 9-3, taking on Jodi Esquivel, who is 6-5. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Cyphers open minus 230, the comeback on Esquivel plus 170. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's Cyphers minus 286, the comeback on Esquivel plus 231. So line margins have tightened up. And again, Cyphers getting a little bit more love at the betting window. Not surprised. I mean, Esquivel is just not a popular fighter. I mean, as far as the MMA community goes, the betting community goes, she's lost three straight fights against solid competition. So I don't really even fault her for her losses. I mean, she's faced nothing but legit competition throughout her career. That's why she has basically a 500 type of record. So that said, I think she's a lot better than most people think overall. So this isn't going to necessarily be an easy fight for Cyphers, but I do get it, and I understand why Cyphers should be favored, and she should in this spot here. I mean, this is going to be a fight where both these ladies, again, are going to kind of stand and bang. Cyphers is the more powerful striker. She can be the more effective striker. I think Esquivel really, out of anything here, she might want to look to take this fight to the ground. She does have a little bit of wrestling and probably a little bit more of a ground game than Cyphers. But again, that's not where these ladies want to take their game usually. They want to stand and bang. Cyphers has good top position if the fight does get to the ground, but she doesn't want to be on her back. And Esquivel, same thing. So I think this fight does end up playing out for the most part on the feet, and they kind of will neutralize each other out with the wrestling. And Cyphers is going to be the one landing the harder shots, doing a little bit more damage, because she does hit very hard. She has 5 knockout victories for a reason. I mean, she's more accurate, and she does have KO power with every strike she throws. So she's going to be the one that's a little bit more dangerous. She's going to be the one landing harder. And I think Esquivel, she does get marked up. We've seen her in the past. She does absorb some punishment pretty well. She's a tough girl for sure. It's not going to be easy for Cyphers to finish her, but I think that'll at least sway the scorecards for her as well. So it's hard not to like Cyphers in this fight. I get it. I understand it, but where the line is now, almost 3-1. Hey, if it hits the scorecards again, I expect it to be fairly competitive. So I would not lay 3-1 on this fight. It's probably sit back, watch it, enjoy it. And again, just kind of pass on this fight.
Yeah, I think this one's pretty straightforward. Cyphers has a lot of power. I mean, she entered the UFC having 4 knockouts, which is pretty rare for a female fighter. And then she actually had Macy Barber in some trouble in that fight in her debut. And then turning it around, she ended up pulling off a split decision against Pollyanna Viana to get that first UFC win. Now, Cyphers isn't the most technical striker, but she is pretty talented, and she definitely has the power to turn a fight at any moment. I would say Esquivel is technical enough to hang with her. I would say Esquivel is actually a little bit better defensively, but offensively, Cyphers is just significantly more dangerous. Cyphers just has that ability to overcome an opponent's defense because she just hits way harder than Esquivel does. And Esquivel isn't quite as accurate as Cyphers either. So if these girls are trading, I think Cyphers will definitely get the edge. And I think Cyphers will be the one that could potentially get a finish here. Esquivel's tough. She's hung in there with some pretty talented fighters, but she did lose every single time so far in the UFC. So I'm not expecting Esquivel to get the win, but I wouldn't be shocked if she survives all three rounds and ends up losing a decision. Cyphers is going to be just a little bit too powerful here. She might even be able to rock, potentially finish Esquivel, but I think more often than not, she just has Esquivel on the defensive and has her moving backwards more, and I expect Cyphers to at least win a relatively one-sided decision just by trying to overpower Esquivel over the course of three rounds in a fight that should likely stay on the feet for all three rounds. Now, moving on to the ESPN preliminary card in the bantamweight division, we have Manny Bermudez, who is 14-0, taking on Casey Kenney, who is 8-1-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Bermudez open minus 245, the comeback on Kenny at plus 175. Right now, over at BetDSI, Bermudez is down to minus 135, the comeback on Kenny plus 112. So needless to say, everybody came in on Kenny early on. Don't blame you guys. I think Kenny is the better fighter in this matchup. He's the more complete fighter overall. So at plus 175, there definitely was some value. That said, where the price is at now, it's getting intriguing though, and I think there might be some value the other way with Bermudez. And again, I'm kind of contradicting myself because I did say Kenny's the more complete fighter, and I truly believe that. The problem is Bermudez is so good at that one trick that he does have. I'm going to call him a one-trick pony, which is really not the case. Bermudez is a more complete fighter than just that submission game, but that's where it's at for him. I believe 11 out of his 14 wins are by submission, and he has such an elite-level submission game. I mean, he's just special on the ground. It's unorthodox, but it's effective. He's so smooth. I mean, you get caught up in his game on the ground, you're not getting out of his trap. So Bermudez is just so dominant on the ground with his submission skill. And that's what the problem is going to be here for Kenny. I think Kenny's going to do really well in this fight. I understand Kenny fought another submission artist that is one of the best on the roster right now in the UFC, and Ray Borg, and he survived it. And he came away with a win. So that was a very impressive win. I just think Bermudez is a different beast for Kenny here in this spot. Even though Kenny is the better striker, Kenny is the better wrestler, I think he's going to be winning this fight, and then he's going to get caught in a sub. That's what Bermudez does, and it's not a fluke. I mean, he's just so good about getting around your neck or getting your back or getting a limb, and just so effective with his submission finishing ability. It's just, again, it's off the chart. So I think regardless of how good Kenny is defensively, he's going to get caught up in a three-round fight. He's going to get caught up in Bermudez's trap. So my pick is Bermudez, and obviously it's going to be my sub if he does get it done. Despite Kenny having such a good overall defensive game, I just think his size, Bermudez's size, and his just ability to finish fights the way he does and goes about things, Kenny's not going to stop it. So the pick is Bermudez. And again, at where the line is now, there might be a little bit of value on Bermudez as well.
And I'm going to go the other way. I was just really impressed by the way Kenny was able to, you know, hang in there against somebody that's so strong on the ground like Ray Borg in that last fight. You know, Kenny is, I would say, the toughest test that Bermudez has faced thus far in his career. And yes, Bermudez is a very dangerous submission artist, but Kenny is by far the superior wrestler. And Kenny does have very good submission defense. And as long as Kenny doesn't get caught in a submission, I don't see how Bermudez would win this fight. I don't think Bermudez is going to get top position to win a decision. I don't think Bermudez is going to outstrike Kenny. Kenny is the more active striker, the much more accurate striker. Even though Bermudez does have a reach advantage, he's really not that great of a striker. So I would expect Kenny could just get inside against him because he's confident in his ability to keep it upright if he wants to and connect. And I wouldn't be shocked to see Kenny shoot for takedowns because he probably trusts himself to not dive into a guillotine choke or a triangle choke as well. Now, obviously, Bermudez is a very dangerous grappler, and he's long and lanky, and he could wrap you up. So Kenny has to be careful. He can't get cocky, but I do think Kenny has the skill set to survive against somebody like Bermudez. So clearly, Bermudez is talented and dangerous, but I think Kenny might have the skill set to neutralize a lot of Bermudez's advantages. So I'm going to side with Casey Kenny. I think he wins it by decision. Now, moving up to the lightweight division, we have Christos Giagos, who is 17-7, taking on Drakkar Close, who is 10-1-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Close open -175, the comeback on Giagos at +135. Right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is close -172, the comeback on Giagos at +143. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two-way action is coming into this fight. Line holding steady. This is a good fight. And I know a lot of people believe it did get bet up a little bit. Now it's getting bet back down the line. So it has moved around a little bit. Hasn't been holding steady the whole time. But a lot of people believe this should be an easy win, I think, overall for Close. But Giagos is a tough out, man. And that's why you're seeing the line kind of holding where it is, under 2-1 right now as well, because this should be a very competitive fight. I've been a big backer. If you guys know that listen to the podcast, that I've picked Close probably every fight that he's been in the UFC thus far. He's won me money. The guy's definitely a very talented fighter. He's got such good tools in his game overall. He's a high pressure fighter. He's accurate with his striking. He's got good wrestling. I mean, there's a lot to like about Close. And again, he's faced really solid competition and he's come through. He's a really talented fighter, like I said, but Giagos, the way he matches up with Close in this fight, he's going to have a little bit of a reach advantage. I think he's going to just be a little bit bigger. And then as far as technical skill goes, Giagos can hang. Obviously, he's got good wrestling. He's on a nice little win streak now as well, which I'm glad to see because, I think the UFC did him no favors early on in his career with some of the matchups that they did give Giagos. But now that he's starting to pull away and winning some fights, getting some confidence under his belt, sort of say, I think that obviously the sky's the limit for him. I mean, he's a very underrated, again, talented fighter because in all aspects of the game, he can beat you on the feet. He's effective with his striking skills, a little bit unorthodox, but he does have some power. And then again, with his wrestling and his submission game on the ground, he's a threat everywhere. So I do think that that's why this is going to be a very competitive fight, but I do give the edge to Close. I think he can push forward a little bit, push a little bit more of a higher pace. He can stick Giagos on his back. If that's the case here, I think he does have the better wrestling. I think his boxing can be a little bit more effective than Giagos as well. And I don't think he gets caught up in a Giagos sub. So with all the good stuff I just said about Giagos, I just think, unfortunately for him, the UFC did throw him another tough spot here in Close. So his losing streak, or his win streak, I should say, is going to come to an end. I think Close just basically is a little bit more pressure, a little bit more effective, and a little bit more savvy to win the judges over on the scorecard. So I think that's what's going to happen here. It's going to be a competitive fight. I don't think Close is going to be able to finish Giagos, but I do think Close is going to be able to outpoint Giagos. It's going to be interesting to see how Giagos looks, or how Close looks, I should say, because obviously he's had a camp change recently as well. So that could affect him a little bit, but I don't think we're going to see much of a difference for this fight, at least. So we'll see. But my pick is Close. And again, as far as a betting window goes, I think it's just kind of that range where maybe throw him in a parlay. If he's under 2-1, if he climbs back up to over 2-1, I would not throw him in a parlay because, like I said, I think if this hits the scorecards, which it probably will hit the cards, it's going to be a very competitive fight. But the edge goes to Close, in my opinion, and I think he does get it done.
Close is definitely a talented prospect, but he can be inconsistent. I mean, we've seen him in his loss where he looked lost out there, got outworked, and most recently he didn't put on the best performance against Bobby Green either. But then at times, like against Lando Vannetta, or Dai Casey, he looks like a world beater. So depending on which Close shows up, I think will definitely affect the outcome of this fight. I mean, if the world beater Close shows up, he shouldn't really have that much of a problem with Giagos. But if the one that showed up and fought Bobby Green most recently shows up, this fight's going to be a lot closer than Close backers are going to like. Giagos, he's definitely a fighter that has made some serious improvements. That last performance against Hadzovic opened some eyes. Was a quality victory for sure. Overall, though, Klose just outperforms him in almost every metric. I mean, Klose is the more active striker, a much more accurate striker. And then in terms of grappling, Klose is much better with wrestling. He gets takedowns. He should be on top position if it does go to the floor. And overall, I just say Klose has a little bit better boxing and the better wrestling. So, Giagos does have some power, so that will be to his advantage, but Klose is a pretty good chin. So, there's just not a lot of pathways to victory here for Giagos unless he's throwing caution to the wind. And in doing so, I think that just would open up takedown opportunities. So, there's not a lot here to like in terms of the stylistic matchup. I just think it's a really bad stylistic matchup. And, Klose should have the edge against Giagos just about everywhere. And I think that that's what happens. Even with, Giagos having a very, very slight, size and reach advantage, I don't think that he has the technical skill to utilize it properly. So, my pick's going to be Drakkar Klose. I think that he wins a relatively one-sided decision. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Rafael Assuncao, who is 27-6, taking on Corey Sandhagen, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Sandhagen open minus 145, the comeback on Assuncao plus 105. Right now we're seeing Sandhagen minus 185, the comeback on Assuncao plus 148. Line did creep up over 2-1. Now we're seeing it come back down a little bit as well. So looking at the Donbass screen, a lot of places are still over 2-1. Pinnacle and again DSI and a couple other places are under. So again, you got to kind of line shop there as far as who you like in this fight to get the best value either way. But that said, this is an interesting fight as well. Obviously, Assuncao has been one of the best bantamweights in the world now for a long time. I mean, he's one of the best fighters in the world as far as being pound for pound, one of the best complete fighters. I mean, the guy has technical skill on the feet, effective power on the feet, capabilities, again, getting the fight to the floor, out wrestling his opponents at times. He's got a good submission game. I mean, your prototypical complete MMA fighter and the level of competition that he's fought has been outstanding throughout his career as well. Under the radar, underrated. Just an amazing fighter, really. Can't say enough good things about him. So this is another stern test, to say the least, for Sandhagen here. And I think he's going to be able to pass it. I mean, obviously, Assuncao has all the good traits that I just mentioned and the ability, the fight IQ to back it up as well. But Sandhagen is on just an extreme roll right now. I mean, I think the guy, obviously, it's highlighted by his striking ability. And talk about unorthodox. I mean, the guy's quick. The guy has great movement and footwork on when he is standing on the feet, obviously. He can be effective. He's accurate. He's powerful with his striking skill as well. And the guy has cardio. I mean, especially in a 3-round fight, we've seen that he could go strong all 3 rounds as well. So a fight IQ, everything you like to see, a ground IQ as well. He has been put on the ground. That's where my fear is though, for him, for Sandhagen backers out there overall. I think that if anything, Assuncao should try to utilize maybe his ground and wrestling edge over Sandhagen. If he could get this fight to the ground and try to implement some top control ground and pound and maybe try to submit Sandhagen on the ground, maybe Assuncao could steal this fight on the scorecards possibly, or like I said, even possibly finish Sandhagen on the ground. But if he's not able to utilize that wrestling, even though Assuncao is a really good striker and I think it'll be competitive on the feet, I think Sandhagen is the one that's going to be more effective. I'm not trusting Assuncao's chin as much. Obviously, I still think he's got a lot left in the tank. I'm not saying he's a shot fighter by any means, but that said, I think that right now is not the time for him to be facing somebody that is a threat like Sandhagen is. I mean, really, Sandhagen, with that unorthodoxy and that accurate striking that he has, probably not what you want to see right now for Assuncao, because he's been, even though his chin is held up overall, he's only been knocked out once officially in his career. He has been getting rocked in fights, obviously. He has been getting tagged, and he's coming off of a quick loss, you know, in his last fight over Moraes as well. So mentally, I'm not sure where he is. I'm not sure where he is right now. Maybe there's a little bit of doubt in his mind as well. So I think this is the timing is really good for hanging to come in here, pick off another great opponent in the Sun Tzu and get himself right into title contention. So I think that's why the UFC made this matchup. I believe that Sanhagen can get it done, and I think he probably wins it in highlight reel type fashion, to be honest with you. I don't want to, again, disrespect to Sun Tzu because he's one of the best fighters we've seen, especially in bantamweight division. But I think right now, Sanhagen, it's his time to come in here, get the job done, like I said, in impressive fashion, and just move on and up the rank. So the pick is Sanhagen. I think he does get it done, and I think he does win by highlight reel fashion. So as far as a bet goes, though, again, it's at that point where if it's going to hit above 2-1, I would stay away from it. I think there's just too much that a Sun Tzu can bring to the table. But if it's under 2-1 where it is right now, if you're finding it at BetDSI -185, or they're, like I said, it's about 180 at Pinnacle or so, I think there is a little bit of value under 2-1. But over 2-1, I would probably stay away from it. So again, line shop, and that's where it's at for this fight. But it should be competitive. It should be a fun fight to watch, and I'm expecting fireworks. But Sanhagen is my pick.
Yeah, my big fear in this fight is that a Sun Tzu just has that innate ability to be a bit of a prospect killer. I mean, over the course of his career, he's handed so many talented UFC bantamweights a loss, whether it was TJ Dillashaw or Marlon Moraes the first time they fought, or Aljamain Sterling, or Munoz. I mean, it just happens over and over and over again because Sun Tzu is just so technically sound, and he just does not make a lot of mistakes. So there aren't a lot of opportunities for even a good, talented young fighter to maximize and punish him for mistakes. So in this fight, Sanhagen's going to really have to focus on his technique. Sanhagen is, I would say, the more powerful fighter for sure. He can mix things up both with his hands and his knees and his kicks. He also is going to have a pretty good, physical advantage because Sanhagen is about 6 inches taller. He's got about 4 inches in reach. So if he can work the distance and actually utilize his range, that will definitely be to an advantage. I would say Sanhagen is also more dangerous than a Sun Tzu in the clinch because on the inside, he can throw some good elbows and knees, but that also would open up opportunities for a Sun Tzu to get the fight to the floor. And even though Sanhagen is a dangerous grappler and does have some good submission ability, I don't think that he could tap out a Sun Tzu without hurting him first. But that could happen. A Sun Tzu, you know, even though he is technically sound and somehow even has better striking defense than Sanhagen, who already does have very good striking defense, if he does get hit, he can be hurt. A Sun Tzu is starting to get up there in years. So, you know, there has to be a point where the young blood has the chance to overcome. And this could definitely be a changing of the guard moment. But again, I wouldn't be shocked if a Sun Tzu just fights a technically sound fight and does not leave a lot of openings for Sanhagen, and he just flusters Sanhagen over the course of 3 rounds and wins a close split decision. That's kind of been a Sun Tzu specialty. He's won close split decisions against TJ Dillashaw, Aljamain Sterling, and Marlon Moraes. So, you know, this could be a fight made for that type of outcome, but I do think that Sanhagen's speed and power and length will give him the opportunity to connect with some big shots and potentially turn the tide in his favor. I think if a finish comes, it's going to be Sanhagen. And if it does go to a close split decision, I'm going to be biting my nails. I'm picking Sanhagen, but I would not be shocked to see a Sun Tzu pull off another one because that's just what this guy has done over the course of his career. He's probably never going to fight for the title, but he's right up there knocking off prospect after prospect and flustering a lot of the top guys in the bantamweight division. So my pick, Sanhagen, but I'm not crazy confident about it. Now, moving on to the main event of the preliminary card in the lightweight division, we have Devontae Smith, who is 10-1, taking on Kama Worthy, who is 12-6. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Devontae Smith minus 750, the comeback and worthy plus 450 opening line. Right now, what we're seeing over at BetDSI is minus 800 plus 495. So about 800, 500 comeback line margins have tightened up. Looking at the Donbass screen, there's 750s, 800s out there across the board. So yeah, about 7-8 to 1. And it's right. I mean, it's crazy as it is. Obviously, worthy stepping in on short notice. I mean, you got to factor that in right away. But outside of that, I mean, worthy on a nice little win streak, worthy a very experienced, talented fighter in his own right. If you look at it, I mean, he's more of a striking-based fighter, so this should be a fun fight if you think about it. I mean, two guys like to stand and bang, and that's what they excel at the most. That's exactly what worthy is. Worthy has a little bit of wrestling, but again, it's, he uses it in reverse. It's he's more of a sprawl brawl type of fighter, keep it upright, utilize a little bit of hands, a little bit of feet, a little bit of knees, clinch work, all that stuff. So worthy is capable of finishing fights, again, and he's faced decent competition throughout his career. So he's a savvy vet and he's been around the sport for a while. But the problem I have with Worthy is if you look at some of his fights in the past, he's been chinny. He's been knocked out 5 times officially. Even though he's on a nice little run right now, it's not the level of competition he's going to be facing in Smith. So I think what you're seeing a ridiculous high line right now for, it should be a fun fight because Worthy is capable of finishing a lot of fighters, but I mean, in this spot here, it's probably going to be him that's getting the highlight reel knockout on the wrong end of the highlight reel knockout, I should say, with Smith. I mean, Devontae Smith has showed us nothing so far, but I mean, some awesome, brilliant performances. His knockout power obviously is devastating. And I mean, he's just backed up all the smack talk and, you know, all the character and everything that he's brought to the table outside of the cage results. I mean, it's a good combination. He's very marketable and I think the UFC is going to get him a big push, but they're, you know, taking baby steps with him. Obviously he's still a developing fighter and I think this is just another quick win on his resume, honestly. So I'd be surprised if Worthy gets out of round one with Devontae Smith. I think Smith is just all the time improving in a different level right now. I mean, so I do think this is kind of going to be more of a walk in the park for Smith than anything else. So Smith by knockout is where it's probably going to end. And as far as the betting window goes, obviously you just stay away from it.
Yeah, there's not much to say here. UFC was originally going to have Devontae Smith face John McDessie. And this was going to be, you know, just a barn burner of a fight with, you know, Smith's power against McDessie's Taekwondo technique. But that fell through. McDessie got hurt. Then they were going to bring back Clay Collard to fight him, and that fell through. And now Worthy's stepping up on super short notice. You know, Worthy's a guy with some talent. At one point, he did have a 6-fight winning streak. But, you know, he also, out of his 6 losses, I believe, has been knocked out 5 times. And Devontae Smith has brutal power. So far in the UFC, he's 2-0 with 2 first-round knockouts, and they weren't against bums either. He's against Julian Arosa and Dong Hyun Ma, both guys that, you know, have had some pretty decent fights in the octagon and have some decent experience. And he also had a pretty dominant one-sided victory to earn a UFC contract on Contender Series. So, you know, this is a guy that has some serious potential inside the octagon. So overall, there's really not a lot to say. Worthy is pretty decent offensively, but he just has some huge holes defensively, and he's chinny. So I think Worthy will hold his own until he gets clipped, and when he gets clipped, he's going to go down hard. I wouldn't be shocked if it's first round as well. So I'm going to go Devontae Smith, first round knockout. I think he wins pretty easily. So Devontae Smith is going to be my pick. Now, moving on to the main card in the middleweight division, we have Derek Brunson, who is 18-7, taking on Ian Heinisch, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Heinisch open minus 215, the comeback on Brunson plus 165. Right now, what we're seeing over at BetDSI is Heinisch minus 147, the comeback on Brunson at plus 122. So again, actually coming in Brunson's way early on at the plus 165, I get it. I mean, honestly, it's one of those situations that, I mean, you got to take him at that price. Brunson is not going to get a ton of respect. And this is another spot with the UFC. This is what bothers me in a way with Brunson. They're using him as a gatekeeper again. I mean, so it's a fight that he should lose, and they're hoping that he probably does lose. There's more upside to Heinisch right now. And again, I'm not saying the UFC put it in there for that reason. But again, I think it is pretty much a business plan to get these kind of hyped fighters or these newer blood, fresh blood in against some of these more well-known fighters, obviously, that have recently maybe had some setbacks or whatnot and is on kind of a decline of their career and get some wins. It's a good business plan. I mean, that's how you got to build stars and build resumes and whatnot. And this is exactly the situation here. That's what bothers me. So this is kind of made, I think, for Hines to get the W over Brunson here. Of course, obviously, I mean, the writing's kind of on the wall there, but Brunson does not get knocked out in this fight or not get finished. I don't think he gets submitted. So it's basically having to be knocked out because Brunson has pretty good submission defense. So if he doesn't get knocked out, I think he probably wins a fight. I mean, Hynish can win on the scorecards, but if he hits the cards, it's going to probably be very competitive. But outside of that, I really think that if it does go to the cards, it's going to be Brunson's cage control that probably wins him the fight. I mean, if it goes to the ground, Hynish hasn't been put on his back. Brunson is an outstanding wrestler, even though he is a declined fighter. I mean, I think it's evident. He does have a little bit left in the tank. He's proven that recently as well. So I think that Brunson can utilize a smart game plan and try to implement it and steal a win over, you know, who the UFC kind of has him losing to in this spot. But with that said, it's a 3-round fight. Brunson's very chinny, as we all know. At times, Brunson's cardio definitely is an issue as well. So I think I am going to lean with the matchup with the UFC right now. But as far as the betting window goes, I'm not going to touch it, though. I wouldn't lay the chalk on Hynish, honestly. It's a dog or pass situation for me. But I am going to pick Hynish to win because, again, the writing's kind of on the wall here. I do trust his chin a little bit more. I think he is improving. I think Hynish is a really solid fighter, but I think he's just a little bit overrated right now. I mean, he's not the striker or the knockout artist that some people seem to think he is. He's not the wrestler that some people seem to think he is. He's not the ground specialist that some people think he is. He's just a very solid fighter that is tough as nails, that it wants to be a champion one day and is putting in the work and is getting better. So with that said, he's improved by leaps and bounds. He's faced some decent competition and he's earned his spot to be in this position right now. So hard not to like the guy and respect what he's accomplished and with his background or whatnot as well. So I'm going to pick Hynish to win this fight. I think he probably can get it done within 3 rounds, but if he hits the scorecards, I think Brunson could steal it. So be careful how you bet this fight, but my pick officially will be a slight lean towards Hynish.
And I'm going to go Hynish as well. And it doesn't make sense on paper because Derek Brunson has more power than Hynish. Derek Brunson has a longer reach than Hynish. Derek Brunson's a better wrestler than Hynish. But Hynish has this innate ability to overcome the odds. Because so far in Hynish's career, he's taken on some really talented fighters, and even though they, you would think, would have had the edge against him, he still was able to overcome their really high grappling skills and has been able to get the win against Cesar Mutant Ferreira and against Antonio Carlos Jr. Those were both guys with elite ground games, strong top control, and Hynish was able to overcome and outwork them. And especially in Carlos Jr.'s case, Carlos Jr. started really strong, but he just wasn't able to keep up the pace. And Hynish eventually turned the tide on him, and Carlos Jr. was not able to consistently get takedowns. And then Hynish just outworked him over the final 2 rounds to win the decision. And I think that's what happens here. Derek Brunson is a fighter that if he paces himself, he can do okay. But a lot of times he just gets a little reckless. And, if Derek Brunson does not slow the pace down here, I think that he tires himself out. Brunson does have a history of having some conditioning issues, and I can see Hynish just kind of slowly overcoming, because, and also Brunson does not have a very good chin. So, defensively, they're about the same fighter, but offensively, Hynish actually lands a significantly better rate. So, even though Brunson does have a ton of power, if Hynish can get inside and start connecting, I think he can do some damage. Brunson is going to be very dangerous on the feet, but only in those short early spurts. If Hynish can drag this out into the second or third round, I think there's going to be opportunities there for him to connect and potentially put Brunson away. My only real concern is if Brunson's able to utilize that wrestling and conserve his energy and hold top position and kind of lay and pray this fight or kind of make it ugly in some way. Because, you know, that's kind of the way Heinisch fights at times too, is he uglies fights up and forces his opponents to expend a lot of energy. But if Heinisch makes Brunson expend a lot of energy, I think that's definitely to his favor, because Heinisch just is this kind of blood and guts type of fighter that digs deep, and even though he doesn't have as much technical skill as some other people, he just kind of overcomes it with a lot of heart. And I think that there is definite potential here for him to overcome the skill disadvantage and get the victory. So, again, it doesn't look good for Heinisch on paper, but a lot of fights have not looked good for him historically, and he just overcomes anyway. And I think that that kind of happens again here. I wouldn't be shocked to see Brunson win a decision if he paces himself, but I just can't trust Derek Brunson to have a really high fight IQ, because he doesn't historically do that. So my pick's going to be Ian Heinisch. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Gabriel Benitez, who is 21-7, taking on Sodiq Youssef, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Youssef minus 305, Benitez plus 225. That was the opener. Right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Youssef minus 278, Benitez plus 221. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Line holding steady at two-way action coming in on this fight. Difficult one to bet at the betting window right now, because obviously most of us will want to take a shot at Youssef more so than anything else. And I have a lot of respect for Benitez. I mean, I bet the guy many times, and he's made me money several times, because he's one of those guys that kind of flies under the radar as well. And he's definitely better than most people realize, because he's a heck of a striker on the feet. He's got knockout power. And again, his jiu-jitsu ability on the ground is pretty slick as well. Wrestling is a problem sometimes for him offensively, I think. And he can get put on his back defensively as well. But Youssef is not the type of person that's going to come out here and look to wrestle, obviously. So I think as far as complete fighters go, Benitez has the more complete overall skill set. But Youssef, the skill set that he does have is, man, it's fun to watch this guy fight. He's explosive. He's a great athlete, of course. He's powerful. He's got that stocky frame. Again, he's got decent wrestling. He could use it in reverse, obviously, to keep the fight upright. So really good takedown defense. Explosive, powerful, fast, accurate. I mean, he is really fun to watch on the feet. He's starting to get, you know, obviously some tough fights coming into the UFC. They're not going to be just walkover type of fights. And we've seen him get pushed a little bit in his last fight against Moraes, because Moraes is a heck of a fighter, obviously, as well. It was good to see. But that said, he came through and he got the W there. And I think this is going to be another stern test for Youssef as well. And Benitez, if you look back, Youssef is really, he could still be undefeated. I mean, even that fight he lost back at Titan 47, he was winning that fight and then just ended up with a freakish kind of slam that Gomez got. I mean, you got to kind of check it out for me to explain, but is how he kind of lost that fight. So it was kind of, I mean, you got to give Gomez credit, but it was more of a flukish type of finish than anything else. So that said, Youssef could very well be undefeated right now. And he's that type of prospect that is just a tremendous fighter that is a huge threat against most people that he fights. So, I mean, especially obviously in the featherweight division. So I think that this guy has power really of a welterweight that he's bringing down to 145. So that's something special. And again, with the speed and the accuracy that goes along with it, I think he is probably going to be effective enough to just kind of pick off Benitez, do some damage along the way, and have Benitez in trouble. And I think he does have enough defense to survive if he gets in some troubled spots that he shouldn't be in. I think he's savvy enough to probably be okay and get out of those bad spots. So it's hard not to like Youssef, but again, at the betting window, 3-1 against a very complete savvy fighter like Benitez that's capable of finishing fights, you got to kind of leave it alone. So it's hard to say there's some value at Youssef at this price, but if it drops like a rock and if it drops down to 2-1 or under 2-1, obviously you got to take Youssef. I don't see that happening though. So another fight that you kind of just sit back and watch and enjoy. And I think Youssef does get the W here as well.
Yeah, this is kind of the battle of Benitez's technically sound striking against Youssef's power. You know, Benitez is a guy that mixes it up pretty well. He actually can outpoint people on the feet, and he also can grapple a little bit. You know, that last fight, he beat Humberto Bendine with a slam. He also holds a couple actual guillotine choke victories as well inside the octagon to go with some impressive striking displays that he put on against guys like Clay Collard and Jason Knight. So, you know, this guy's dangerous. Granted, you know, when he did face a couple, you know, top guys near the fringe of the top 15, like Enrique Barzola and Andre Feely, he did lose those fights. But, you know, so this is going to be a big test because, Yusuf, I feel, is somebody clearly on the rise that the UFC is very high on, but this is a serious test. Yusuf has a ton of power, but, Benitez, I wouldn't be shocked to see, Benitez, kind of try to pick him apart over the course of three rounds. But, you know, Benitez is much better defensively, but, Yusuf does push a really high pace. He's always looking for the finish. And, if he connects with something solid, Benitez could definitely get hurt. You know, Benitez did get knocked out by Andre Feely back in the day. So, it wouldn't shock me to see Yusuf connect with something nasty and have him on wobbly feet. But, if this just stays standing in striker's range, I also wouldn't be shocked to see Benitez pull away and potentially outpoint him over the course of three rounds to win a decision. Now in terms of grappling, Yusuf has a bit of that judo background, I believe, and he can keep upright. So I don't expect that Benitez will really be able to get a lot going on the ground. But on the feet, this should be really interesting. Like I said, it's that battle of power against technique. And while I do think that there's definite possibility that Benitez could outpoint Yusuf over the course of three rounds, you know, I'm a believer in Yusuf's speed and tenacity. And I think even though he does have a tendency to eat some shots along the way, he makes up for it with how hard he hits. And if they are both throwing at the same time and they both connect, I think it's going to be Benitez that goes down. So I'm going to pick Sadiq Yusuf, but I definitely am going to be a little bit concerned about Benitez potentially outpointing him. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have Yoel Romero, who is 13-3, taking on Paulo Costa, who is 12-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Romero minus 190, Costa plus 165. That was the opening line. Right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Romero minus 147. Costa is at plus 123. So line margins have tightened up. Early action coming in Costa's way. I'm really not surprised. Undefeated fighter with the ability, the power, the skill that this guy has on the feet, the takedown defense overall that he showed thus far. The guy is definitely a threat. And again, with just the look and the markability that he has with that resume, and the way he fights and goes about it, I understand why the UFC's kind of giving this guy a push and put him in the spotlight against a very difficult opponent, though, in Romero. So this is by far the best fighter Costa's ever had to face here. And this is obviously a fight that if he wins, gets him right in line for a title shot. So this is the high stake for both these guys. Obviously, Romero wants to kind of derail the hype of Costa as well in this spot here, but he's going to have to be careful because on paper, stats, everything kind of points at obviously, Costa being the better fighter, the more accurate, the busier fighter on the feet, and just the more a diverse striker, really, if you look at it. And again, with that knockout power to go along with it, he's definitely a dangerous fighter that Romero has to respect. But that said, Romero, obviously, his athleticism speaks for itself. He's got that wrestling background. He's got that raw power. I mean, he's just a nasty fighter. He gets you on the ground. He drops some bombs. A lot of people can't absorb that kind of punishment from Romero. On the feet, again, he has some accuracy as well. If he lands, you're in some serious trouble. He's got that kind of knockout power. And in my opinion right now, he could be wearing that middleweight title as well, because I think he did edge out the last fight against Whitaker. Again, can't take it away from Whitaker. Those are just classic battles that those guys have had. But I'm just saying, Romero's right there. He could be champion right there, right now. So he's been great. It's a shame we're not seeing him fight a little bit more. He's been out over a year. Costa's obviously been out over a year as well. So I guess they're on kind of an even playing field in that regard. But with everything kind of coming into the equation here, I like Romero a little bit more, because I think, again, if this fight plays out on the feet, both these guys are capable of finishing each other that way. but I do trust Romero at this point. I think he's just been in the fire a little bit more, especially as of late, than Costa has. And I do think that Romero can also kind of lean on his wrestling background if he needs to get a takedown. Even though Costa's not going to be an easy guy to take down and control, I think he could be able to possibly do that, control the fight a little bit, drop some bombs, and maybe finish him that way as well. Or if he hits the scorecards, you know, maybe takedown or two steals really the fight for you along the way. So should be interesting, but I do see Romero as being the side here. I think he, again, he just has more ways to win this fight. I think this is by far Costa's biggest and best test to date, and I don't think that's the case for Romero either. I think Romero has fought in better fighters than Costa is what I'm trying to say there. So not really a big step up in competition for Romero. It's probably a step down, obviously, and it's vice versa for the other way around for Costa. So the pick for me is Romero. I think he does get it done, obviously, inside the distance as well. So, I think he has another highlight reel type of finish to go along on his resume, and I think we do see him take on the winner of Adesanya and Whitaker here coming up soon. So the pick is Romero, what should be an awesome fight to watch.
Now, if this fight stays standing over the course of three rounds, then, yeah, Costa definitely has a shot to win it. Yoel Romero is not as good of a striker as Paulo Costa. Costa is a guy that pushes a really high pace, although Romero is better defensively. Costa has pretty much just gone for the finish every time he's fought. And that being said, I don't think he would be able to easily do that against Romero. Romero has the ability to, you know, pull back and shoot for a takedown if things aren't going his way. And Romero, you know, being an Olympic silver medal wrestler, that shouldn't be too difficult. Even though Costa has been able to thwart takedown attempts so far, he really hasn't faced anybody with even close to the wrestling ability that Romero represents. If Romero can get a takedown, his top position can be just brutal. He can drop some nasty elbows and finish a fight at a moment's notice. So that's definitely something that Costa is going to have be thinking about the whole time. If he overextends, if he throws too many punches in combination, Romero can just duck down and take him down. But in terms of punching range, Costa definitely should have the edge here. But you always have to factor in Yoel Romero's explosive athleticism. I mean, this guy can throw head kicks. He can throw flying knees. He has spinning back fists. I mean, you name it, he can throw it, and he can throw it with fight-ending intentions. So Costa's basically is never going to be safe, even in the stand-up, because of Romero's ability to throw just these devastating strikes from anywhere. So he should definitely be concerned about that. But if he can keep it upright, that's definitely going to be to his advantage. That being said, you know, I don't think it's going to be nearly as easy as what he's had so far. For the most part, Costa has faced guys that wanted to stand and bang with him. And while Yoel Romero has been willing to stand and trade, I mean, he also is definitely going to look to mix things up because Romero just has a very diverse skill set, and he can win fights on the ground. He can win fights on the feet. And if the feet is not going well for Romero, he definitely will be looking to shoot and take this to the floor. Now, you also do have to factor in Romero hasn't fought in a long time. Romero is 42 years old, but again, that hasn't slowed him down yet. I mean, he was this close, and I mean real close, to being UFC middleweight champion in that rematch against Robert Whittaker. So if Paulo and he sees Paulo Costa as that obstacle to get another opportunity at the belt, obviously Paulo Costa sees him as the chance to get a title shot as well, but I can't pick against Yoel Romero. He has beat so many talented fighters over the course of his career, and he has consistently been facing top 10, if not top 5, UFC middleweights, and for the most part, getting the better of them. So I'm going to side with Yoel Romero. I just think the diversity of his attack is too much, and I just don't think Costa will be able to keep the fight in his wheelhouse over the course of three rounds. So my pick's going to be Romero. I think he gets the job done, whether it's by TKO or decision. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the welterweight division, we have Anthony Pettis, who is 22-8, taking on Nate Diaz, who is 20-11. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
My opening line, Pettis minus 170, the comeback on Diaz plus 140. And again, this has been out for a while, so if you want to check out MMAOddsbreaker.com, we have a future article that has Anthony Pettis versus Nate Diaz and Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic. So both the co-main and main event from this card were released a long time ago, and the article's up again on MMAOddsbreaker.com, so check it out there on our website. But my opener again, Pettis minus 170, the comeback on Diaz plus 140. And right now what we're seeing over at BetDSI is Pettis minus 137, the comeback on Diaz at plus 116. So early action did come in Diaz's way. Now we're starting to see some action coming back on a Pettis as well. So there is two-way action on this fight. Obviously, both guys extremely popular. I mean, this is basically a dream fight. At least a few years ago, it was for a lot of fans out there. Diaz hasn't fought since his Conor McGregor loss. And obviously, Pettis is kind of a declined fighter, but he's redeemed himself a little bit, obviously, at 170 pounds recently, coming off that huge win over Wonderboy Thompson as well. So Pettis is back in the spotlight. This is a good, well-matched fight, a fan-friendly type of fight. Obviously, both these guys like to stand and bang, so we're not going to probably see too much wrestling going on in this fight. But if that's the case, honestly, I think that's the path to victory for Pettis here as well. These guys are going to both be effective on the feet. I think, obviously, Diaz pushes a high pace. He pushes forward. His boxing is going to be the key here in Pettis' face, using that length a little bit. Pettis utilizing his kicking game. He's obviously has some decent hands as well, but I think where it's at with him is mixing some leg kicks, some body kicks, obviously try to hit the head as well, and just utilize that power and the precision that he does have to kind of damage and bust up Diaz. Now, both these guys actually take a lot of damage. Their defense in the past, especially, I'm saying in the past because Diaz hasn't fought for a while, but typically speaking, they both get marked up, and Pettis' defense has actually gotten worse as well. So I think both these guys are going to wear the damage. Both these guys are definitely going to kind of go at it back and forth to the point where they both do hurt each other. So I think they're both going to be kind of wearing it. But if anything else, like I said, if anything differentiates these guys at all, I think as the fight progresses, I think it's Pettis maybe stealing the fight by a takedown or two. I mean, Diaz, his takedown defense has improved, but against really solid wrestlers, capable people of taking the fight to the floor and kind of controlling the fight that way, he gets beat by those guys. And I think even though Pettis isn't really known for his wrestling, that's an underrated part of his game. And I think his submission defense is good enough that even if he does put Diaz on his back, he's not going to get caught up in a sub. So I think it's kind of a safe spot for him to kind of mix in some takedowns and try to get Diaz on his back. Now, will he implement that game plan? We'll see. But I think that is definitely a path to victory for him. So I'm going to kind of lean Pettis' way. He just has more ways to win this fight. I don't necessarily trust him all the way. Again, I think he is a decline fighter. I don't think that just because he got off that, he's coming off that huge win, that he's all of a sudden kind of found his magic again, and we're going to see old school Pettis show up again. I'm not really that confident that his ability, especially if he gets into deep waters against high level competition. I don't know. We'll see. But right now, I think in this fight, it is a 3-round fight. Diaz has been out for almost 3 years. So I think this is a winnable fight for Pettis. And despite decline or not, I think it's a spot he can definitely win. So it's a tricky one to bet at the betting window as well, because another spot really that I could see it going either way, but I'm going to slightly lean towards Pettis. And again, I just think he has more ways to win this fight. Should be a good one though. And I'm glad Diaz is back.
Yeah, what really makes this fight interesting is the diversity of the attacks that these guys have. Because in boxing range, you know, Nate Diaz is just so much more dangerous than Pettis because he just keeps that constant output going. And I don't think Pettis can keep up, especially not the most recent version of Pettis where he has really started to take a lot of damage in fights. You know, back in the day, Pettis used to be able to avoid damage and then land these big crazy attacks out of nowhere. Really had the diverse kicking attack that he was constantly looking for big body shots or head kicks. And those aren't coming nearly as often anymore. You know, he is coming off of an incredible knockout against Stephen Thompson, but you have to remember in that fight, for about the first 9 minutes and 50 seconds, he was getting the crap kicked out of him. Stephen Thompson was putting on a clinic against Pettis, but then Pettis had that beautiful Superman punch and knocked him out, and everybody forgot about the first 9 minutes and 50 seconds of the fight. So, against somebody like Nate Diaz, who was a lot more durable, I don't think Pettis will be able to do that. So yes, Pettis does have more power than Diaz, but I don't think it's enough to take Diaz out. I mean, Conor McGregor has more power than Pettis, and yeah, he knocked Nate Diaz down a few times, but he wasn't able to finish him. So, in this bout, realistically, the best chance for Pettis is to really get the kicking game going early. Like, just start chopping Diaz down. I mean, we kind of know the legend of the Diaz family just ignores leg kicks. So if Pettis just goes to town on leg kicks, he could slow Diaz down enough that he doesn't have to worry as much about the pace that Diaz can push in this fight. He also, obviously, if you go back, Diaz, the only time he's ever been stopped by strikes was when he got head kicked. So if Pettis chops down low, maybe Diaz starts to defend, go high, knock him out. That realistically is the best path to victory for Anthony Pettis. That being said, it's not going to be easy because Diaz really does like to put a lot of pressure on you. Diaz throws about twice as often as Anthony Pettis, and he can put on a clinic. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Diaz just start to overwhelm Pettis on the feet. In terms of on the ground, both fighters are tremendous with submissions, but I would say, as Nick mentioned, that Pettis does have the superior wrestling, so I wouldn't be shocked to see Pettis shoot for a takedown, but Diaz has a pretty dangerous guillotine choke. Even though Pettis has only been submitted the one time, and it was basically more from a rib injury than anything else, I think he'd be playing him with a little bit of fire if he shot for takedowns and tried to win this with his wrestling. But that could be a path to victory for him. But on the feet, I think Diaz does put enough pressure on Pettis that Pettis doesn't have those easy openings to land the kicks. It's not nearly as easy to land strong, powerful kicks if you're on your back foot. And I do expect Diaz to be keeping Pettis on his back foot over the course of three rounds. So even though Diaz is coming off of a long layoff, I'm going to side with him. I think that the pressure will be enough because other than the pressure, both fighters have very similar striking rates in terms of percentage of significant strikes landed. Both have similar defense. And I do feel like Pettis's striking defense is getting worse. I do feel like he's in a decline, even if he has scored some impressive victories. And Pettis has taken a lot of damage. And if you're entering a fight against Nate Diaz, having really started to take a lot of damage, Diaz can really put it on you. So I'm concerned about Pettis. And even though he is coming off of that tremendous win, if he is not able to finish Nate Diaz or potentially ugly this fight up and grind it out, I think Diaz just outpoints him or potentially overwhelms him and gets a finish. So my pick's going to be Nate Diaz. Now moving on to the main event of the evening in the heavyweight division, Daniel Cormier, who is 22-1 with one no contest, takes on Stipe Miocic, who is 18-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Cormier minus 140, the comeback on Stipe at plus 110. And again, this is an article you can find at MMAOddsBreaker.com, same article as I was mentioning in the last fight with Anthony Pettis and Nate Diaz. Right now, the current line over at BetDSI is Cormier minus 139, the comeback on Stipe at plus 119. So line margins have tightened up, and line basically stayed the same as the time that I opened it. Now, it has floated up and down a little bit. Cormier did get some early action, and the line climbed towards about 200 or so. Now we're seeing it climb back down as well. More love coming in for Stipe. This should be another great fight. I mean, two of the best heavyweights ever, I think, really. I mean, I'm glad that Cormier did move up back up to the heavyweight division. I think that it's kind of intriguing to see a guy his size. I know, I mean, he's obviously not a skinny guy or anything like that with his frame, but I mean, he's not a tall guy. We know. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of length on him, and he's been able to accomplish amazing things thus far. I mean, staying undefeated in the heavyweight ranks before he got in the UFC, obviously, as the former Strikeforce champion, and then his run in the UFC. I mean, the only losses being to obviously John Jones at light heavyweight. But I mean, like I said, he's undersized for the heavyweight division, and with that athleticism, with that special everything about him. I mean, he's just a special type of athlete with Cormier. That's for sure. There's no question about it. But he is facing another special athlete in Stipe. I mean, Stipe has, you know, he's proven that he was actually the greatest heavyweight. He beat the record. Nobody was able to defend the title as many times as Stipe has. If you looked at the fighters that he's beaten in his title run and in his title reign and the accomplishments that he's made throughout the whole time, you know, that he's been in the UFC, he's beaten some very good fighters, and Stipe's never been better, really. So it was kind of, I don't want to say it's a flukish loss to Cormier, but it was definitely unexpected, especially since, you know, the likes of Ngannou, that Stipe was just coming out, you know, off of a big win over Ngannou or whatnot as well, and he was able to survive that kind of power. But that said, I really do think it's been said before that Cormier carries his power even better in the heavyweight division. I believe that's true. And I mean, it really showed in the last fight against Stipe. I mean, if you look at it, I know a lot of people are going to kind of point back to the fact that when they were in the clinch and they Cormier, when he ended up landing that punch, that uppercut that ended up knocking Stipe out. But if you look at it before that, Cormier started landing some shots, and I think it started affecting Stipe even before that final kind of knockout blow that set him down. And, you know, Cormier obviously followed up from that. But if you look closer, I think that Stipe was getting hurt. Now, it looked like he was winning the fight. He was doing okay in that fight before, you know, everything kind of just totally went the other way for him. But that said, again, if you look a little bit closer, I think Cormier was actually doing better than most of us thought. And I think it's going to be another one of those fights here. I mean, it'll be back and forth. I think Stipe can actually be controlling this fight and winning this fight. And obviously he has redemption on his mind. I mean, the guy, he wants nothing more than to get that championship belt back around his waist. I mean, that meant so much to him, and I know that he's going to, you know, do everything he can in his power to be ready for this fight and not have history repeat itself. And again, with the reach advantage, he has an 8-inch reach advantage, with the size advantage over Cormier, with his ability. I mean, Stipe is one of the best boxers we've seen in the heavyweight division for sure. I mean, he's got power in his hands. He's a very good, accurate striker as well. And he just has that toughness about him and that durability in most cases, that he just kind of keeps pushing forward and gets the job done. So I've never picked against Stipe his whole UFC career, and I'm not going to start now, but I do approach this fight with caution, because I know that Cormier, I think, is again more dangerous in this weight class than he is at light heavyweight. And I think that from what I've seen from Stipe, he might be hitting that kind of decline spot. If that's the case, I mean, obviously Cormier is not getting any younger in his own right. So again, that's why you got to approach this fight with caution. I think both these guys, even though they're fighting at a high level, and I don't want to say their best days are behind them quite yet, we could be approaching that time for either fighter. So be careful which way you go with this fight. I think if you're going to bet this fight, I could see a finish either way, honestly. I don't think it hits the scorecards. I don't see it going to decision. So if you like Stipe, go out there and bet Stipe by knockout. If you like Cormier, go out there and bet Cormier by knockout. Because again, I don't see it going the distance. I don't see it any other way than by knockout either way. So I'm going to lean Stipe's way and hope he gets some redemption and wins the heavyweight championship back. So the pick is Stipe to be the new heavyweight champion of the world.
So heading into this one, I thought Stipe would win the first time, and I was proven wrong. Both guys have a ton of power. Both guys can finish this fight with one good shot. Daniel Cormier is the better athlete of the two. He's a little bit quicker. So that is definitely something to take into consideration. It's something I underestimated, how quick he could land a good strike out of the clinch. And that's what pretty much ended the fight there the last time. Stipe was doing decent from distance, but Cormier was blocking it enough and deflecting and not eating a big shot because he was seeing them coming. And Stipe ate one that he did not see coming, and that really was the difference. This time around, one thing you do have to take into consideration is the fact that yes, Daniel Cormier has fought and defended the title since these two matched up, but Cormier also has suffered an injury since these two matched up. Cormier has been a guy that has historically had a lot of injuries, but I believe he had to have surgery after he beat Derek Lewis. So Cormier has been on the sideline recovering, had a bit of a back problem, I believe. He's had multiple knee injuries throughout his career, and now Cormier is 40 years old. So, you know, it potentially some of that speed and athleticism that he had the last time that they fought could be a little bit diminished. Stipe Miocic, on the other hand, he's still really dangerous. And I say Stipe is still just athletic. He's 36, which, you know, doesn't make him a spring chicken either. But I think that he's been just kind of biding his time, training really hard, and trying to look for holes in Cormier's game. And maybe he's found something. I mean, he's kind of been focused in here on Daniel Cormier for a year now. So this should be a really interesting fight, and it could honestly go either way. I would not be shocked one bit if Cormier repeats history and connects with something nasty and knocks Stipe out. But I'm going to side with Nick here as well. I think Stipe does get his belt back. I think at some point maybe Cormier looks to dodge something, and he doesn't quite have that same quickness that he used to have, that maybe he was relying on, and it connects, and Cormier gets hurt. So I'm going to side with Stipe Miocic. I think he gets his belt back. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 241. We have a free play to give out. Make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of a free bet via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.